higher performance, and faster and more reliable.
Welcome to Open Paddock, episode 215 for Tuesday, January 21st, 2014. Tonight on the show, NASCAR fans go all Richard Sherman on reported new chase format, IndyCar open testing at Sebring, some news on what has been going on there with the Chevy engines and what have you. Monte Carlo, get to wrap that up with Kubica rolling. ACP for Team O'Neill. Much to the chagrin of those who are reporting the demise of the Rally America series. We're also going to talk Snowdrift preview. This could be Bernie Ecclestone's swan song at the helm of F1, and F1 launches this week. This is Open Paddock. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the show one of the founders of Open Paddock, Mr. Sean Pishin is first in the roll call this evening. What are you drinking?
Apparently, whatever.
He's drinking so much that he can't talk.
Sean?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I must have had the mute button on.
I knew it.
So please allow me to forgive me for my newbiness. I'm not paying attention.
How about I do that again?
Okay, yes, let's do it again, because I thought I had... See, I'm counting, and I had the mute button off,
but it was
on. See, I think
that's going to edit this shit out.
Yeah. You're an asshole. Edit that. All right, well, again, I'm sorry.
Okay. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the Open Paddock Podcast Mr. Sean Pishin, first in the roll call this evening. What's your drink of choice this evening?
At the moment, I have no drink. I am a fish out of water.
Okay, while Sean goes and preps himself properly for this podcast, let me move on to J. Douglas Patterson. Mr. Patterson, I know you've got something.
I have a little captain in me.
Little captain. Got the leg up.
Yes, I do.
Mike Shaw.
I'm drinking a dead guy ale.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Myself, I have the Righteous Ale from Six Points Brewery this evening, and good rye IPA. Very tasty.
Wait, I'm so excited for 100 Acre. So excited. I tracked down four bottles of rye on rye for us. Aw, yeah.
This sounds very, very dangerous.
Yeah, Park
Expo. Are you going to remember the event afterwards?
No. Park Expo on Saturday is going to be a little sketch.
This, as long as Park Expo is not Doug Expo.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking we'll.
It's too cold for that.
We'll be there. People will be working on theirs. Like, do you have to turn that wrench so loud? No, it should be good times. The Boulevard Rye on Rye is really amazing stuff. I think you'll enjoy it.
Looking forward to giving it a try. Well, that brings us into the miscellaneous topics of the evening, and the first one on the list, because I'm in charge of the show notes. Brian Clausen, you've heard of him, IndyCar guy, kind of, because he went through NASCAR and then went to sprint cars and then up into Mazda Road to Indy and then did the 500 and what have you. Yeah, he competed in the Chili Bowl, a midget race in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he won the A-Main on Saturday. So
that's one of the events I'd really, really like to go to.
Doug, then you and I need to hook up and go.
Yes, yes.
I'll swing by. And
awesome. Yeah, Chris just down the road from me. It's, what, about 3 hours?
Yeah. I've been considering going for years because it's that deep winter break, you know. You just need that, you know, get away and see some racing. So
yeah, and I can't afford to drive down to Argentina.
Yeah, well, there's that too. Fittingly, his car was painted up with all kinds of IndyCar decals and such. IndyCar was his sponsor for the event.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, kind of an interesting one. And like I said in the opening, NASCAR fans are getting all Richard Sherman on the potential changes that are coming to the points in NASCAR. Now, first of all, one would have to ask Richard Sherman, is everybody aware of what his claim to fame is at this point?
He's not the tank guy, is he?
No.
No, Sherman tank. Nice.
He's a certain player for a certain Seattle team who made a really great play at the end of regulation.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he just went nuts on everybody afterwards. His interviews after the game, he was yelling, "Yeah, don't disrespect me!" And it was hilarious. He's setting himself up to be the next Dion. So whatever. That will just make me really sad when Peyton Manning smashes him in a couple.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah,
I'm so excited. Finally, vindication.
You know, I really have mixed emotions about this.
Oh, no.
Well,
how can you have mixed emotions about Peyton
Manning? No, I have no mixed emotions about Peyton Manning. I like Manning. I like him a lot. My baby girl was born in his hospital, right?
Yeah.
We got the little Peyton Manning swaddler sleeper thing and all kinds of other swag. It was pretty cool, actually. But he plays for the enemy. As a Chiefs fan, I have a really hard time rooting for the Broncos, right?
Well, you already lost.
You got to root for the team that beats you,
yeah. Well,
unless they're the Patriots.
It's true. But see, the other thing is that I'm an old school Chiefs fan, and I remember when Seattle was back in our division. So I have this lingering prejudice against the Seattle Seahawks. So I'm like,
Let me cap our discussion of the NFL and move into NASCAR with two thoughts.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Bill Belichick, you're a whiny little punk.
Well, we already knew that.
And Tom Brady, you too.
So,
moving on.
These both teams will be able to, you know, calm things down because both of them legalized marijuana, so
indeed,
they'll be able to.
Should be a this fabulous post game.
We'll have a Super Bowl.
That's right.
I saw on
go ahead.
I was going to say, I saw on track form there was some discussion that there might be a potential fish fest at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and somebody responded by saying, yeah, I see that as highly unlikely because all of the fish fans, they've all moved to Colorado and Washington.
Yes, they have.
Anyway, moving into NASCAR and the potential changes that are going on with points. Again, this is potential. It hasn't been announced, but lots of leaks are saying that they're going to change the chase field from 12 drivers to 16 drivers. Pretty much any driver who wins during the regular season will be virtually guaranteed a berth in their playoff system, their chase format. Then the final 10 races, they're going to have 3 elimination rounds. So if you're not in the lead by, you know, you will be eliminated out over the course of the chase down to where they have 4 drivers left, and it's winner take all in the final event.
Oh, no way. That's ridiculous.
So have they been talking to Bernie, or has Bernie been talking to them?
I'm just saying, that's just ridiculous. Like, okay,
wow.
So what was the other 35 races for?
Yeah, I'm
to
confused
get to that
by
point.
This. I guess I can understand. Okay, you've got the NFL where over the course of a 16-game season, you establish the best record, which gives you a chance to get in the playoffs. And then once you're in the playoffs, it's win or go home. Okay, I can understand them saying, hey, that's a great model, but it doesn't work for racing when there are 43 cars on the track and any one of them can make you go home.
Oh, yeah, like, here comes Juan Pablo Montoya spinning into the fired jet fryer.
Well, NASCAR is safe from that now, right? Well, you don't have to worry about that in Indianapolis.
Same kind of random thing is like, okay, like start and park Scott Speed is like, oh, Daytona's like my best track ever, and then loses control of his car and takes out, you know, or Talladega is usually in the chase. But, you know, oh, we got a chance at winning. We're going to go ahead and run the car. And then he like wipes out out half the field, and now all the guys who probably should have been in the top four, like, you know, I don't know, like Johnson or Boyer or something like that, now it's like, oh, well, they're gone. And coming in at number 10 is Brendan Gaughan, or whoever this guy is, you know, NASCAR driver X, who is complete garbage and just made it into the Chase, and now he's like one of the final four drivers, all off of chance, none of which was his. He was just able to avoid. He could have finished like 25th in the race, but been the like the third place Chase driver because all the other cars are in the garage. I don't get it. I don't know.
Yeah, what is jarring to see about this potential format coming to reality is we're used to seeing racing done one way. We're used to seeing a points championship. The NHRA went away from points and went to their, you know...
medals?
Yeah, pretty much. And I don't think it's really done anything for NHRA. It's not any more or less in my consciousness because they've done that.
You know, I look at Formula One, I look at Indy, well, okay, Formula One, maybe not this last year, but, you know, I look at IndyCar, I look at a few of the other series, you know, Formula One back in the past few seasons, of course, they have had excellent championships, so they've gone down to the wire, and they've not had to do any of the shenanigans with championship chase playoff.
Yeah.
So double elimination, round robin, blue jay crap or whatever, you know, kind of scheme you don't want to work up with medals or whatnot. Yeah. They just had a properly structured points distribution with a, you know, the other part of that is that they, in addition to well-structured points per race, they also had some nice parity between a few teams.
I think "had" is the operative word there in,
well, for Formula One.
In your statement, because "had" referring to their points championships, because IndyCar, you know, we all see decline in racing attendance and all that kind of stuff. So all the sanctioning bodies go out and they get their selected bean counters to come in and consult and tell them what would be better. Mm. And these consulting firms have all come back with the same things. Formula One, they're doing a double points race at the end of the season, which is being mocked off the face of the planet by,
yes,
you know, the 200 million Formula One fans. IndyCar received recommendations from their consulting firm that said that they should do some sort of playoff system, and they haven't said they aren't going to do it, which scares me. NASCAR is jumping on it too, and NHRA did. I mean, those are some big hitters.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't like it.
I don't like it, but I understand what they're doing. NASCAR got to a plateau, and they were kind of at a false high, a false bubble of this is what, you know, this is where we could be. We're the second biggest sport in America and all this kind of stuff. And it reached that plateau, and instead of realizing, you know, instead of NASCAR realizing, okay, we've kind of reached our saturation point, they just said, let's pump out more, you know, more coverage, more races, more this, more that. We're going to just shove it in your face, 24-hour NASCAR news networks and radio stations. And instead of helping the matter, it just kind of ushered in the end of the plateau and the steep fall at the other side.
Yeah.
So now they're trying to recover from this fall, from their plateau, which was helped by the economy tanking and all that kind of stuff. And they're just trying to stay relevant by changing their structure and everything. And in other news of trying to stay relevant, we can jump into the IndyCar portion of the program and talk about the Indy 500 and all that is good and true and right in the state of Indiana, but nobody seems to notice it.
You know, I do want to take the opportunity to point out some positive stuff.
Okay.
And that is our new IndyCar guru, Mr. Eric Hall, mm-hmm. has produced a couple of really nice articles on kind of looking at the history, not just of the 500, but of championship auto racing in North America. And part two was published earlier this weekend, and it's a fantastic piece, a brilliant historical piece, and I'm really excited to see where he's going to go with his analysis in part three. But anyway, if you well make a chance, not if you get a chance, but make the time to go to opopedic.net and check out Mr. Hall's article. They really are fantastic.
Very cool.
His first article in that series was very good. I have not read article number two, and it shames me to say it.
It should.
It also shames me to say that the IndyCar series is continuing to grasp desperately in the hopes that Kurt Busch will join the Indy 500 this year.
Oh yeah, why? I saw that, and that was my my reaction too, Mr. Shaw.
Yeah, there's no need.
If IndyCar can get him to come, great. If he can come here and race at the 500, great. Nothing against it. However, IndyCar can't sit here and hope that the bump that the IndyCar series and the Indianapolis 500 would get from him attending one race would be anything worthwhile. It might be a blip on the radar. It might be nothing at all.
Well, and that's my point, is that, you know, it seems like you're spending a lot of energy on something that isn't going to produce a whole lot of results. You know, it's a matter of the juice not being worth the squeeze.
My question is if you spent half as much time promoting the fact that Kurt Busch is coming back, or not coming back, but coming to the 500, Juan Montoya coming back to IndyCar, here's my problem. What about the guys who are already there?
Yeah.
What about James Hinchcliffe, who already has a story to tell but is getting basically, you know, dumped on because, oh, Montoya's coming back. Never mind that he had a championship season. Never mind that Simon Pagenaud comes over from, you know, sports car racing, nearly wins the championship with Schmidt-Peterson. But yet, you never hear about that from IndyCar. All you hear is, oh, well, Juan Montoya's coming back, and what about maybe Kurt Busch coming to the Indy 500? Well, what about Ryan Hunter-Reay, who is the first American to win the championship in how long? You know, about Dario exactly. Franchitti, who was obviously a legend in his own right, and it took the whole entire IndyCar apparatus took him for granted. And was just like, oh, well, we got this guy forever. He obviously went to NASCAR and was garbage, so we got him. His career gets cut short by an unfortunate incident. And now, what are you doing? You look like you got mud in your face because you're too busy talking about Juan Montoya and Kurt Busch and not focusing on Ryan Hunter-Reay or James Hinchcliffe or Simon Pagenaud or Graham Rahal, Lord forbid. I mean, all of these guys deserve to have a story told and a legacy forged where they're the leaders of a sport, and IndyCar would rather spend more time talking about NASCAR than building their own superstars.
What Sean said.
You cannot
just have a one person plug in and fix all the problems. I don't care about Juan Montoya going to Penske. I know Montoya as an entity in NASCAR, as a sports fan. I knew him as an entity when he was in IndyCar before. I knew him as an entity in Formula One. I know Juan Montoya, but tell me about Sage Karen if he gets into the championship. His climb Mazda Indy, which you spent so much resources and time developing. Tell me about slipped my Andretti Autosport fifth car.
Carlos Munoz.
Yes, Carlos. I'm sorry. Yeah, I can't believe I couldn't remember Carlos Munoz. Carlos Munoz finishes second place in the Indy 500 as a rookie for Andretti Autosport, and the only thing that was bigger, that could have been bigger than Carlos Munoz finishing second as a rookie, is the fact that Tony Kanaan won because he's such a fan favorite. Why don't you tell me about Carlos Munoz and his story? You know, I don't know these guys as entities, thus I don't care about them. But yet you're going to just plug in Juan Montoya, and now, oh, well, I know Juan Montoya. I'm going to start watching IndyCar just for Juan Montoya. Does anybody watch NASCAR for just Earnhardt Jr. anymore? No.
I watch NASCAR for Juan Montoya.
I watched
more NASCAR because of Juan Montoya, but that would be from like zero to maybe one race in 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I watched NASCAR for him. I watched NASCAR to see Sir Jimmy Johnson, because I've always been a Johnson fan. And for the guys who they built, because what NASCAR did is they took a guy, Jimmy Johnson, who was a relatively unknown quantity, which was, hey, I'm an off-road truck racer. And he came into Hendricks, obviously a successful organization, and then he won the championship. NASCAR built him up with their marketing, with Hendricks' PR machine, with the fact that he was winning races because he was with a great team. And, you know, what about, you know, like I said, what about Ryan Hunter-Reay? He won the championship for Andretti Autosport. Look at James Hinchcliffe winning all those races and Pagano, and the story that Schmidt-Peterson has. I mean, it's really one of those things that, you know, I really don't understand why IndyCar just can't be happy with what they have and work diligently to produce what they have. Instead of just always looking for that one quick fix.
Let's be fair with this discussion from Kurt Busch. This kind of came out of left field. It's from John Horowitz at ESPN, who pursued, you know, questioning whether he was going to be making a run for the 500, because they said he might do it. On the other side of that, IndyCar just went through a transition, their PR staff and everything like that. And the new guy is getting his feet on the ground, and nothing has been said out of IndyCar PR for most of, you know, January. And much to the ire of all the track forumites who are starting to make their own IndyCar memes upon the death of IndyCar because their PR department shut down for 2 weeks. Anyway.
Well, I don't think that it's so much a situation where it's IndyCar is like burning down and like dead, but I think there is some concern. Some say that there's like positive, like, you know, it's good, you know, this silence might be good. Maybe it's, you know, IndyCar, blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you that for any series that's within IndyCar's realm or status as a business, as a relevant series in North American motorsports, this kind of silence is not good.
Mm-hmm.
No silence is good. Because if you are quiet, you're not promoting your drivers. You're not promoting your product in the off season. One of the best things I've always told people who talk to me about Open Paddock is that the off season is always my favorite time, because I work hard to put out a lot of content because it brings new readers. It brings new listeners. Why is IndyCar not seizing on that and taking the chance to really promote the drivers, really promote the teams, really make a lot of noise? Not everything has to be about the rules. Not everything has to be about competition. Not everything has to be about sponsors or team making this move or that. Tell me about what you have. Tell me about your drivers. Tell me about your racetracks. Tell me about the kinds of people behind the scenes. Make noise that way. There's a way that you can make noise that's positive versus a way that, you know, you have to make noise to appease everybody who's such a diehard fan. Where's Carlos Muñoz going to go? Well, who's the fifth car at Andretti? Or is Penske going to have four cars? Or blah, 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 blah. We don't need to know that kind of fire. Tell me your story. Tell me about your drivers that are going to be there.
Well, and, you know, why so much was said about the lack of PR is simply IndyCar was going through their winter meetings last week, and that's usually big time for copy. And you see a lot of stories come out of those winter meetings, and really nothing came out this year. The only thing that really came out this year during winter meetings was, oh, yeah, we're considering changing the qualifying format at Indy, and, yeah, we'll tell you about it later.
And to me, there's just so many things. I think that, you know, one of the key phrases that you and I, Mike, used to throw around when we talk about IndyCar was the fact that there is a situation I'm losing it. Doug, type me a message, and now I'm losing it. But we talked about the fact that, you know, IndyCar had to do new things, basically, had to usher in new time. And not always live off of the past, because that's not the way it is anymore. But what I think's happening is, you know, IndyCar's changing too much, too fast, And again, focusing and concentrating on those things that they could control and could probably get more viewership or more fan base from, versus, oh well, we're gonna create a stupid road course race, which, yes, I said stupid. I think it's retarded. I'm not watching it. I'm not going, because it's a slap in the face. If you're gonna do a race, you should just extend the 2 weeks of practice again. But anyways, I'm old school like that. I like that better in a road course race. We're going to change the qualifying format for Indianapolis. Well, why are you going to do that when it makes perfect sense to do it on Saturday where more people can attend? And you know, how many cars are you going to have on bump day? Why can't bump day be on Sundays? I mean, I just don't understand.
Also, this past week, we had Chevy testing at Sebring, putting the Chevy IndyCar V6 engine, the 2014 version, through its paces. A total of 10 teams and drivers put their cars on the track with this this newer refresh version of the 2.2 liter turbocharged direct injected engine. Very cool. Among those teams, let's see. Well, we know that Ganassi was out there. Ganassi was out there with Tony Kanaan. There we are. Hey, maybe I shouldn't have got that second beer.
Oh, like, wow, how do you forget Tony? Tony the Torch, man.
Indeed. On top of Tony Kanaan, Elio Castroneves and Will Power were out there. Juan Pablo Montoya. Ed Carpenter Racing had Mike Conway. KV Racing had Sebastian Bourdais. KV Racing Technology SH Racing, I think, is their going name this year.
Huh?
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, Chip Ganassi.
Turning into a Panther or a Dryan Reinbold, I guess.
Dryan Reinbold or even Schmidt, Hamilton, Peterson, whatever their... Yeah. Let's see. We also had, Scott Dixon, Tony Kanaan, Charlie Kimball, and Ryan Briscoe out there. And Carlos Huertas was out there with Panther. So that's kind of an interesting one because he's out of left field. I didn't pull up an article on him, but if anybody knows anything on Carlos, please let us know.
He raced a little bit in Europe, Renault 3.5, I think, and he brings money. Enough said.
Yeah, enough said. Exactly.
And please tell me how Panther Racing is going to get the National Guard sponsorship with Carlos Huerta.
Oh, they're not. That's gone to Ray Hall.
Yes, that's right.
Well, at this point, that has not been confirmed.
Okay.
There was speculation that it was going to happen, and there are some articles published to that effect, but it's never been confirmed that that was actually happening. Now, this makes me wonder all the more that it is. Well, because
given this,
Ryan Briscoe was lined up to get that Panther seat. And there were many that said the reason, that it took a while before he got signed at Ganassi was because, well, they had to wait until his Panther contract, because he had already signed with Panther. Right. But it was under the stipulation that that National Guard sponsorship come through. So when it didn't come through, he was released from that contract. And now we're seeing Carlos Huertas. I'm thinking, yeah, Panther is struggling as they should be.
Yeah. We're not going to see I don't think we're going to see the National Guard on the number four.
Yeah. So the National Guard has gone from being happy with finishing second at Indy to being happy at finishing maybe top 10 at Indy if they're lucky.
But here's the thing. They get an American driver at Indy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that, I still don't understand why they didn't push for that more often during that National Guard sponsorship. But I certainly can understand because they said that the generals were not very happy when they fired the last American driver that was there.
J.R. Hildebrand, you're fired. What are you telling me, soldier?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad decision, if you ask me. That was a really bad decision.
Well, yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, really, you know, it's testing. It's manufacturer testing, so it's locked down. Very little information about this test other than the cars go fast and the Chevy engine's wonderful and all that kind of stuff.
PR crap.
Yeah, the only thing that really is kind of interesting out of this is Kanaan is going to be using Chris Simmons as his engineer for the number 10 car, not the fella that followed him over. And I can't think of his name right now. But his engineer from KV came with him to the number 8 car. But then when Kanaan moved to the number 10, that engineer stays with the number 10, the number 8, and Kanaan is now using Dario's engineer on the number 10 car.
And so Briscoe is getting the number 8 engineer, Kanaan's old engineer?
Yes, and I wish I could remember the name of that, but it's the same guy that's been with him for years and years. And there are many people who have said that Tony Kanaan is a very difficult man to drive. To engineer for, and this guy he knows Tony's ways, shall we say. So this could be fun.
Idiosyncrasies.
Yes, idiosyncrasies. That's a good way of putting it. Only other real news from the IndyCar series. Let's go ahead and talk about the IndyCar competition department. Yes, Mr. Walker has decided that he's going to let the drivers be part of the process when they're making decisions. They're going to have closed-door meetings with the drivers. They've already had some with the 28 drivers that, you know, this was during the winter meetings. They had some 28 drivers that were the majority of the grid from the last year or so. Went ahead and said they're going to have some sort of collaborative process aimed at enhancing the series from the inside out. Okay. Does anyone really care about this?
No. Sort of.
Okay.
It's a wise move on IndyCar's part. I'm not going to say it's a completely PR type of thing. Because it isn't. It has some real import. But I mean, it's not huge either, right?
It's not huge. I mean, in my mind, it's very similar to what's already been happening when drivers make comments in the media or directly to IndyCar, and they take those statements under advisement and make changes, which has happened on a continual basis. So
it's the way I look at it is it's an indication that the culture in IndyCar management is indeed changing and changing for the better.
Fair. That's good. That's a good way of putting it. We can't say that they have not listened to the drivers in the past, because they certainly have. However, they're giving them a forum for voicing those comments without it spilling out sideways in a statement in front of the press or something like
that. Yes, exactly.
Spilling out sideways with two middles at New Hampshire.
You mad, bro?
Oh my!
Spilling out sideways with Scott Dixon this past season.
Now that was a real "Are you mad, bro?" statement.
Indeed, but he channeled it into something productive and went out and won the championship. So we can't really complain too much. Still, he is the class of the field. So very cool.
How many times have we seen that, though, where somebody said something about IndyCar and IndyCar's like, oh, yeah, well, I'll fine you a lot of money. And then they're like, okay, well, I'll just win the championship. What are you going to do now? I'm the face of your organization for the next 6 month off season.
Nice. I kind of wonder about that because, we've seen that in Indy Lights, too, if I recall correctly, at Milwaukee a few years ago.
Yeah, well...
We've seen team owners cause mutiny.
Yeah.
No,
they weren't the champions, and, of course, IndyCar said, you're not going to be around here.
They're like, oh, not only are you not champions, but you're banned.
For two years.
For a long time.
They're back, though. They're back. Yes. So I'm excited. O2 Racing, and the crew are going to be back this year. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's not
the last,
there.
The last story that I have for IndyCar this evening, specifically, it does tie into Monster Road to Indy, so it can be our segue. We have nearly 20 IndyCar-related 2013-2014 drivers that are set to compete at Rolex next weekend, this coming weekend.
That's awesome. That's such an awesome race.
Well, it is, and it's awesome because you have such the huge involvement from across motorsport. Right, you get NASCAR drivers, you get IndyCar drivers, you get all kinds of sports car drivers. Mm-hmm. You even get a lot of junior Formula drivers coming in, getting a crack at the big leagues in GT and in the prototypes. So, you know, I've never been a big Grand Am fan. I definitely have never been a fan of the Daytona prototypes. But I have always been a huge fan of the Daytona 24. What an epic race.
Oh, it's fantastic, man. It's like the highlight of my weekend this weekend is the Rolex 24. Now, I don't even care if it's the start of North American motorsport. That I could care less about. The fact is it's the best. You know, it's the closest thing to a real international race of champions, nearly, when you look at this, you look at the kind of talent that is drawn to it. It's a real all-star race and a fantastic opportunity, I think, for some of the finer folks in motorsport to display their talents.
I agree.
Well, it's your only race of champions this year.
Yeah.
Because Thailand blew up and Bangkok would not host the race of champions this year.
I'm
so.
Sorry. I tried to rectify that situation. the government of Thailand was despondent and just in shock over the whole entire thing, and I tried, but you know, I don't know.
They were unresponsive, and it could not be solved with direct intervention, shall we say?
Exactly,
Sean. This is when you play the game "Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo." This building has to go.
Exactly. You know, I was like, you know,
are you willing to host yet? Okay, yeah. Let's pick another building.
I was like, oh, so what you're saying is my people aren't welcome in your country. Okay, well, you can say goodbye to Parliament. I mean, it's not like you've had a functioning Parliament over the last 5 years anyways.
Didn't we do and that to just... the French?
No.
Oh, no, that was the embassy in Libya.
Yeah, we.
What do you mean you won't let us fly through your airspace? All right, screw you guys. We'll bomb the crap out of your embassy.
All I'm saying is people are usually given ample opportunity to comply with my demands. Nice. And when those demands are not met, I'm not responsible for the reign of death. Yeah, the consequences.
So. Okay, steering it back to motorsport.
Oh.
But Dad!
Yeah, beer number two says, Simon Pagenaud will be racing a Honda HPD ARX-03B for extreme speed. Sebastian Bourdais will be in a Corvette DP. Justin Wilson is going to be driving for Michael Shank Racing, who has not announced he will be doing an IndyCar program this year, because that's going to be a story at some point in the next few weeks, even though it shouldn't be. He'll be driving a Ford EcoBoost Riley prototype. James Hinchcliffe will be in a Mazda Skyactiv-D coupe. Scott Dixon will be in a Ford EcoBoost Riley prototype. Tony Kanaan will be in a Ganassi Ford EcoBoost Riley prototype. Ryan Briscoe will be in Corvette C7R. Oh my goodness, sweet car.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Badass.
Let me tell you how quickly that team became my favorite GT team. It started when they launched that car.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. I think all of us are in agreement there.
I was a guy, and I love that car.
The Corvette, the C6R, the C5R, those were dead sexy racing machines. This one just carries on that proud tradition. So,
okay, well, no. I'm not going to start that argument because we'll be here until like midnight.
Anyway, Graham Rahal will be in a BMW Z4 that is being prepared right down the road from me in Rahal's shop here in Hilliard, Ohio.
That's a cool-looking race car.
Yeah. Mikhail. Yes, sir.
Oh, that car is just ugly. Are you serious right now?
No, I'm going on that. I am serious. That's a cool looking race car.
We won't drag
Ryan
up the show
Hunter
much
Ray today. Will be in an SRT Viper GTSR in the GT Le Mans class. Mikhail Elation will be driving a Ferrari 458 Italia.
Mikhail,
one of the most beautiful cars ever designed.
Yes.
Italia. I'm not.
All right. Anyway.
So who's this Mikhail guy?
Yeah, he's driving in the IndyCar series this season. Didn't you know?
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, that one guy who nobody ever heard of, who got a ride over everybody that everybody had heard of.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh wait, he got his Russian mafia money, right?
Right.
Ooh,
gotcha.
Organized crime, bro.
I felt so bad for Sage, because I thought, you know, surely that second Schmidt seat was his for the asking, right? He's got the scholarship from being the Indy Lights champ, and he has good backing from Comfort Revolution. And then all of a sudden, no, we're going to go with this Mikhail guy. Screw you. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Sponsor versus
you will
cash.
Give me a seat in your series unless you want problems. Yeah.
Yeah.
However,
like, hey, we got enough.
He did finish first in Formula Renault 3.5 series in 2010, so he has some skill.
Oh no! I'm not saying that he doesn't. I'm just saying that. You know, here Karam wins the Indy Lights Championship for them.
Yeah.
And
well, and up to this point, Schmidt, Peterson, Schmidt, whatever, Schmidt, Hamilton, Peterson, you know, two dogs and a pickup truck. Whatever their name is this week, they have made an effort to hire people that have come up through Lights.
Well, they have, and they failed this time. I think they failed miserably.
Well, they failed at securing the funding they needed, so therefore they went out and got somebody who could bring them the funding. So,
no, I think they found someone who could give them more funding.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, that too. Say no more. let's see. Who else is
Catherine
in
Lake
there?
In the Catherine. Delta Wang?
Ooh.
Wing?
Nice. Is that the acceptable Brilliant Delta slip. Wing or the under litigation Delta Wing?
It's the under litigation.
Well, it's Delta Wing Racing Cars, Delta Wing DWC-13
right.
prototype.
This is the actual one versus the Nissan.
Well, no, I think Nissan has I don't know. I don't know who has the legitimate claim.
Are we talking about the Z-Rod or whatever that thing is?
Yeah.
You know, why can't you have both? I thought that was like the way that you actually got, that could maybe one day it could actually have its own class or something. Why do we have to hate?
Well, it's all about protection of intellectual
properties.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's it exactly. It's about the protection of those rights. It's why Ford sued Ferrari over the F-150. That anyone was going to confuse a Formula One car with a pickup truck.
Well,
but you know, it's your intellectual property, it's your trademark. You have to defend it because if you don't, it's going to set a precedent.
In this case, it's what
that was
the designer.
Yeah,
yeah. Ben Bowlby designed the dang car, but he designed it in partnership with Ganassi Racing and whatever Delta Wing group that they started.
Right.
Then Ben Bowlby goes away and consults with Nissan on this car.
Well, because they had a partnership for the 24 Hours of Le Mans, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now the Delta Wing group, basically Chip Ganassi, is suing Ben Bowlby, the guy who designed the car, because Ben Bowlby designed it for Chip Ganassi when he was working for Chip Ganassi. So therefore, Ganassi owns the Delta Wing.
Yeah.
Although the funny thing is, the Z-Od from Nissan, they're claiming is a totally different car, although it isn't. Right.
Yeah.
From the fact that it's got a whole new
batteries.
Battery system.
Yeah.
You know, the drivetrain, all that's different. But yeah, the dimensions and everything are all pretty much spot on the same.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Decide. You know, there's been some question whether the Delta Wing is actually going to be reliable. I think it'll be reliable. I just don't think it'll have the ultimate pace that it needs to have.
Yeah, and that over time can be worked on. So.
Yeah, okay. Let me say, it's not going to have the pace at Daytona that it needs to have.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe later in the season they pick up pace just like the, you know.
Well, I think like, when they go to a street course.
Yeah.
Or a, you know, a tight, tight twisty course like Mid-Ohio or Barber, someplace like that, or a street course, I can see the Delta Wing doing better than on the steep banks of Daytona. Yeah.
See, I think they differ because I think aero comes into more play.
Well, it has aero, but it has no power.
Right, exactly. So I guess from what I'm saying is that, you know, when it comes to power, the tight and twisty acceleration is going to be such a big deal.
But it's not going to have the top end. It's not going to have the top end that the DPs are.
Yeah, and then it'll do better on the tight, twisty courses.
The main thing is its 1.6 liter turbo can go like what? The one third the stops as everybody else, and that's what they're banking on, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to have to bank on, because they certainly don't have the pace, you know, when it comes to lap time. But anyway, we'll see how this plays out this coming weekend. On with other open wheel guys that are
AJ Allmendinger. I guess he's an open wheel guy because he used to race in Champ Car, and then he crashed twice in IndyCar this past year.
Yeah. On the first lap.
he's going to be driving a Ford EcoBoost Riley for Michael Shank.
Now, I'm going to guess that he doesn't get to be the first one at the wheel.
That's probably a wise decision on Michael Shank.
I think with a lot of these guys, you're looking at for three drivers. And that's not a slight on them. It's the fact that a lot of these cars are going to have full-time competitors in the rest of the, Tudor Series championship. So,
Tuscar.
Whatever. They need a better name.
Yes, they do. Tristan Vaudier is going to be driving a Mazda Skyactiv D Coupe in the prototype class.
E for diesel?
Yes.
Nice. They're bringing that back. Good.
Well, they're not bringing it back.
Didn't they have it last year?
They did. They had it in the GT or GTX.
Oh, right.
Is what it was in. This is a prototype. The 70 and the 07 are two of the Skyactiv diesel prototypes.
That'll be interesting. Okay.
Anyways, well, sure. Let's go with interesting.
Alex Tagliani and Connor Daly are both going to be driving an RSR Racing Orica FLM 09 in the prototype challenge class. James Davidson is going to be driving an Aston Martin Vantage.
Beautiful car.
In Townsend. E3. Which means he's going to be at the tail end of the grid.
Yes. And then also Townsend Bell will be at the tail end of the grid in a GT3 458 Italia.
Mm-hmm. Again, a GT3 car. The GT Daytona. Because, of course, the GTLM... the GT Le Mans are akin to what we call worldwide as a GT2 car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the GT Daytonas are a little bit below what the FIA would call a GT3.
Yeah.
So I think they're trying to bring that up, and you know, of course, they're looking at it from a cost containment standpoint as well. So.
Right.
Yeah. Now, also, we've got Sage Karam and Gabby Chavez from the Indy Lights ranks. Sage Karam's going to be driving for Chip Ganassi in one of their Rileys. And Gabby Chavez.
The
01, right. The 01. Holy cow.
That's true.
Right, with Scott Pruitt and
Aloha.
So I'm all for seeing Sage win a watch. But I'll tell you why he's not going to.
Why?
He's not in a Corvette. No, if you looked at the Roar Before the 24, if you were not in a Corvette, you were slow.
Yeah.
I mean, the Corvette prototypes and the Corvette GTs just ran away from everybody else.
Well, that makes up for a lot.
The things we don't know from that is the gas mileage that they're getting in that the reliability. So we shall see. Then also Gabby Chavez, I was looking at the end of the wrong list. Gabby Chavez is going to be driving a Delta Wing as well.
Along with the same car as Catherine Lake.
Yeah, so very cool. Complete list of the IndyCar drivers there that are competing. And if you're interested in watching 24 hours of complete boredom, go ahead and watch this event because I'm not a fan.
I am. I will
watch it. Watch it in segments is what it is.
Well, you know, this is how I watch endurance racing, right? How I watch endurance racing is I have it on the TV, I have my beer, I'm walking around, I'm doing stuff around the house, I'm watching the racing, and then all of a sudden I hear the tenor of the announcer's voice go up an octave, and then I come running into the living room, see what's going on. But it's not one of those things where you just sit in your chair and you watch. You know,
almost sounds like how I'd watch a NASCAR race.
Well, I mean, a NASCAR race.
Except I'd be
more or less
sleeping until the tenor of the voice goes up.
They last so long that they're kind of endurance events themselves, right?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be, anyway. But they are. But no, it's the way that you would follow, say, a rally. You know, following it live. You're not sitting there glued to it all the time, right?
No.
You listen to it. You're doing other things, and you know, yeah. And so there's a different way in which endurance racing is consumed than a sprint race like IndyCar I can't say NASCAR because they take too damn long. But anyway, you know, a race that's going to last an hour and a half to 2 hours, IndyCar, Formula One, you watch it in one sitting. You don't do that with the 24. You can't do that with the 24 unless you're insane.
Well, call me insane then.
The last 2 hours of the 24 is pretty exciting. I will say that. If you can catch at least just the last 2 hours of the 24, that's pretty intense stuff. At least it has been the last few years.
Oh, it's exciting all the way through. It's just that, you know, I get up and do things and mill about and come in and...
I do have to say, between the 24 and the Pro Bowl, I can't figure out which one to watch. I think that the hardest thing will be me figuring out if I'm going to push the power button on the TV or not.
The Pro what?
Yeah, exactly. Have you seen what they're doing? Have you seen what they're doing? You know, speaking of sports that are trying desperately to gain relevance, the NFL is doing just fine, but nobody watches the Pro Bowl because it's a complete waste of time. However, this year they're doing something completely different, and they're having a couple of washed up past football players who have become announcers. They're having them draft Pro Bowl teams. So it's not going to be NFC versus AFC. It's going to be like Deion versus, I can't remember who else the other guy's team is getting drafted by. I can't remember who the other dude was that is drafting. But
Jerry Rice?
There you go. It's Jerry Rice. So it's like, these were great players back in the day, and now they're great people who talk. But they're going to draft the Pro Bowl teams, and that's going to make everybody watch this year.
Yeah, it's horrible. I was like, well, guess who's still not watching the Pro Bowl?
You know, it might be interesting to watch the draft, but beyond that, I can't even begin to feign interest unless you're giving me a free ticket to Hawaii to go watch it.
No,
I could do that. Anyway, moving on, Doug, it is the Mazda Road to Indy portion of the show, and I know you have like all of a minute and a half worth of content this evening from what you were saying before the show.
Well, he's also moved to rekindle his fire.
Oh, I see. Yes. So I guess we can bump that to the end of the show and jump into Rally. And there was a certain Monte Carlo event this past weekend, Mr. Shaw. I think you have something to say about it.
There was. The opening event, Monte Carlo, always a challenge. The weather was once again as unpredictable as ever. The only person that really got it right, actually, was normally stage end announcer George Donaldson, he had actually predicted the week before exactly what it was going to be going on, and actually he nailed it. I'll say the reason why I got it right is because he's a pilot, and pilots have to be 50% weatherman, so it seems like his knowledge there kind of helped out a bit. So tire choice was key, and start off with day one, it was pretty exciting to see these cars finally get out on the stages and show their stuff. Thierry Neuville debuting the Hyundai to big fanfare didn't make it to the end of stage one.
Ah!
They all went out on super soft cut slicks. So you know it was rainy, but it was early in the morning. It was actually so early it was mostly dark out, and there were some icy patches. And apparently Neuville was going just a little bit too fast and went wide on a corner, slid off, and destroyed the rear suspension. And no more for his little Hyundai. Oops. The Monte Carlo and Thierry Neuville have not got along very well. In three different times that he's been there, he's not made it past the first day. So, no fun for him. Yeah. So hopefully next year he'll do better. Hyundai was a little upset, but the thing is everybody was out there on the wrong tire. The exciting thing, though, the very first stage of the very first rally, Kubica comes out 30 seconds ahead of everybody else. He dominated that stage.
That was shocking.
Sebastian Ogier, on the very first corner of that stage, he actually hits a wall. We were all joking that the way the event went, his fenders must be made out of the adamantium. Because nice. That car just it would not break. He had other issues in the event as well, where he'd go off a little bit, bounce off a ditch. The car still did not break. So there is some serious strength in that design. On to day two, we ended up having basically Kubica and Bouffier in the lead. So here we had Bouffier was in the Ford Fiesta as a private entry, not even under the M Sport banner, really. And turns out he ended up having a stage win as well. Chris Meek was showing really good pace. Danny Sordo won a stage in the Hyundai as well. And he was showing up in third. So all of them were showing really, really well. But that didn't last, unfortunately. The other Hyundai also, under Danny Sordo, ended up having issues. His was electrical. He suddenly found that he had alternator problems, pulled off and tried to get going before the next stage, and the car just wouldn't start back up. So new car, some issues there, but the pace was proven. Neuville was like 6 seconds up on Ogier before he binned it. Again, a stage win and was in third place for Danny Sordo. So, until he had the electrical problem. So, you know, I think that shows really good promise for the platform. Growing pains, new car, new championship. Let's see what happens. Day two is where things really got a little bit longer. The clouds opened up and it's just deluge of rain. They weren't dealing with snow at all. It was all just rain and heavy, heavy rain. Lots of aquaplaning going on. But Ogier just showed why he is a world champion. He went from being 30 seconds back to leading the race leading the event by the end of the day. There was one stage there that was 39 kilometers long, or not, sorry, 50 kilometers long, and they ran it twice. And he just stretched his legs on that stage and ended up just dominating. Unfortunately, Kubica, who was running a firm third, ended up going into a corner, real slow corner, steps on the brakes, and they have this what they call shiny tarmac. Basically, it's like the overly tar-ridden, you know, black tarmac like we have over here. They called it shiny tarmac. When that stuff's covered with water and all the oil kind of seeps up, it's as slick as ice. And he just hit the brakes to make a turn, and the car just wouldn't turn. Slowly slides off the edge just before a bridge, and ends up the car off in a ditch where he couldn't pull out of it. So end of his event, unfortunately, at his debut in the full season for the M Sport squad. Then we go into day three, and ends up being again more torrential downpours, but they kind of split it up. This is where the famous Colda Torini, you guys heard of that? Yes. Stage where they go way up high and then come back down. It's an infamous stage where you can start off dry at the base and then snow at the top and then dry again at the bottom when you come back down. Well, they did it in two different runs. And the first, they did it in the evening, early evening, and then they had this long break, and they waited for it to get dark, and they're going to do the very final stages at night. Well, when it changed from day to night, unfortunately, it turned to a huge amount of snow. 20 inches fell up on the col.
Oh.
Now, these 20 cars,
inches?
They said something 20 inches it fell. What's that?
20?
I believe so. Oh, you know what? Sorry. Maybe they were talking centimeters. You're right. So I think it was like 20 centimeters, maybe.
Okay, okay.
No, gosh.
Holy crap!
It was a hell of a lot. Let me see here. And 20 centimeters, that's still a fair amount, I guess.
Yes, it is.
They had so much snow dumped down that the first car that went up on the stage got stuck, and then everybody else ended up getting stuck behind them and couldn't get moving. And they were on studded tires.
Well, it doesn't matter if you're high-centered.
Exactly. And that's the thing. A lot of people are kind of complaining. They're like going, oh, wait a minute. Aren't these, you know, four-wheel drive rally cars? Well, you have to understand, Monte Carlo is still a tarmac rally.
That's because you got to be able to touch the road surface.
Exactly. Exactly. So after some wonderful spectators pushing them and trying to get them going, and finally some people, you know, got them out of those super slow corners and got them moving, everything was fine. But they ended up scrapping the stage. So for all those fans that are up there braving the cold and, you know, having their little campfires, waiting for all the action on the top of the Col de Torini, no, they just saw them do a transit speed through the col to get, and then they just moved on to the next stage. The next stage was the power stage, the final stage of the day. It was just rain because of lower elevation. And this was where Jari Matti Latvala just, man, he was blazing fast on that one. He wanted to at least show that he could make that VW, you know, work under him. And
well, the power stage, you know, that sprint type of thing, that really fits his style, doesn't it?
It seems to. But the other thing about Latvala is he's trying to prove himself also on tarmac. He's always been a gravel guy.
Right.
And he's been moving. He's been doing better and better on tarmac over the last few years. Okay. And he really showed how much faster he is from everyone else. I think he ended up Ogier was the only one almost as fast as him. Ogier didn't even need to push because he's already way in the lead, so I don't know why he took a chance. But, you know, race drivers are race drivers, right?
Yeah,
they're in it to win it, and they don't know how to slow down. If you make them slow down too much, they actually make mistakes. So
Senna at Monaco, isn't that right, Sean? Am I remembering that correctly?
You are indeed. When he was going so fast that they asked him to slow down, and when he did, he crashed.
Yeah, he made a mistake.
Yeah, you lose concentration. You have a certain mode that you go into, right? You get that
rhythm.
Zone. Yep. And you don't want to mess up that rhythm. And Latvala really got his rhythm in that stage and ended up winning it and getting the power stage points. So the top for that one, actually, I didn't even bring up the results. Sorry about that, slacker that I am. So it ended up being Sebastian Ogier winning the event. Brian Bouffier ended up in second overall. And get this, Chris Meek and the Citroen ended up getting third on the podium. This is the first time a Brit has been on the podium since Richard Burns in 2007.
Wow.
Or sorry, 2007. Sorry, 2003.
Yeah,
sorry,
2003.
Sorry.
Yeah, let's just say seven seems a bit recent, but
yeah,
you know more than I.
Gone by then.
But that's crazy for the Brits, though. I mean, they were all on the Twitter, losing their mind about it, and you know, really, I mean, it's what needs to happen if that sport really wants to pick it up, because it really is. It was during those times when we were talking about McRae and Burns, you know, the battle between McRae and Burns. I mean, Rally was, I'm not going to say, obviously it wasn't Group B level, but I mean, it was really popular and these drivers were really making a splash for the series. And I think that's what it needs to kind of get back on the right track, because it has to be back on the right track in Europe and Britain before it can really kind of make its way and really be a force in the States.
Well, if it's
well,
not
and if
big
you look,
there,
follow that same path. Because, well, follow that same path that that Sean's saying there. It was McRae that helped bring it here to where it became part of X Games.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We would have not had it at X Games if it wasn't for McRae's influence on Block, who McRae and Block worked together, you know, got Pastrana and everybody else, you know. And next thing you know, it's a freaking X Games, and it's – now America knows what rally is.
Exactly.
So
it needs to be popular there.
Just to kind of finish going through the results here, Mads Osberg, also in the Citroen, ended up in fourth. Really great for him in a tarmac rally. Again, he's not tarmac's not his specialty, but he seemed to take to the Citroen team pretty well, which is rather surprising. A lot of the drivers that come out of, you know, Finland, Sweden, and Norway, like he's from, they're used to driving sideways a lot. And the Citroens are usually designed for the precision driving, like Loeb. It was designed around Loeb, and he's more like a sports car, you know, or Formula One type driver, where he's very precise and very, he doesn't go sideways as much. And he did really well in that. Jari Matti Latvala ended up in fifth. And then the other Brit, Elvin Evans, out of the Welshman, who got his ticket after doing so well in the WRC Academy and then moving up into WRC 2 last year, and now he's got his ticket with M-Sport. He ended up in sixth. Andreas Mikkelsen and the other VW ended up in seventh. And I'm going to butcher the name, but we have Malasharek in eighth.
Welcome
and then we end up getting some... then we end up with some of the guys in the WRC 2 type class cars. You got Michel Gamba, I guess, ended up in ninth, and Yuri Protasov in 10th there. So again, always an exciting event. One thing that was also interesting was that same week, and I think I might have mentioned this last week, but M-Sport doesn't have a major sponsor on their car. If you notice, you see just the EcoBoost stuff, like, you know, kind of Ford kind of stuff. You know, they've got, of course, Castrol has been with them for a long time, but it's also on other cars. But it's just running as the M-Sport team. But with all the attention going to WRC this year, I mean, they had some live coverage. They had full live coverage of the power stage. Some other stages earlier in the event were covered completely live. They've got more TV outlets than they've had in years. I think we're on the cusp of Ford coming back.
That'd be good.
As the title sponsor.
It's certainly a big deal, and it also speaks to the fact that Ford had often said, you know, hey, we can't be in this business because we're not getting the kind, you know, we're putting a lot of money into it, and we're not getting a lot of return on investment because of the TV deals, the constant fighting amongst those, you know, inside the sport who don't really know what's good for it and whatnot. So it's, yeah, I think it's good for Ford. It makes sense for Ford. I wouldn't blame them if they did come back, because now is the time. I mean, you have a perfect opportunity to seize on this momentum. You're going to have what? You've got Volkswagen, Citroen, Hyundai, or Hyundai, or whatever you want to call them.
Hyundai.
And then you've got Toyota also potentially talking about entering the fray again, and now bring in Ford. And I mean, now we're talking about an off-road, essentially what, you know, you get with stuff like touring car, a good chance to show cars that you can buy, you know, per se, at the dealership on Monday, but you see it out on stage on the weekend, and it makes sense again. And again, that goes back to what we were saying with people like Chris Meek finishing on the podium. The more that the Brits do good, the more television it may garner, the more manufacturer like Ford might decide to come back and help a team like M-Sport or whomever, you know, the Brit drives for, basically, because it's that kind of attention.
Yep.
So it's a win-win all around.
Agreed. So that was Monte Carlo. I guess I could do just real quick. Manufacturers points. VW is in the lead with 37. Citroen's right on their tail with 33. M Sport, unfortunately, with Kubica going out. Well, actually, no, he's not on the team. Sorry. It was Mikko Hirvonen. I forgot to mention him. Mikko ended up having an electrical issue as well. He made it onto that final stage, and then the alternator went, and he just couldn't – the battery just didn't last. So
unfortunately,
that was some bad luck for
Mikko Hirvonen has been very forgettable these past couple of seasons.
Oh, he's been bad since he moved. Just bad.
Well, when he moved to Citroen, yeah. But he's back at M Sport, and I think things will come back to him, but – you couldn't blame this electrical problem just wasn't his fault. It just,
well, no, but it doesn't help his psychological situation.
Very true, very true. But Elvin Evans also, you know, obviously finished well, and so that put them – they've got 10 points, so they're in third. And then, of course, the Volkswagen Motorsport 2, which is just a standalone of Andreas Mikkelsen, is in the fourth place for the manufacturer's standings for now. So – we'll see how it plays out. Sweden is the next event, just a few weeks away, so that'll be exciting. That's always it's one of the fastest events in the WRC, so we'll have to see what happens there. There's some 17 WRC entries, so should make very exciting play. Moving on to other rally results, let's talk about a little bit of Dakar, the ultimate endurance rally.
Oh, I got it. Before we get into results and things, I have to mention something that Crazy Leo posted on Facebook that was
the picture.
Yes, absolutely epic. Picture of the, you know, if you're not familiar with the Dakar, if you only watch the WRC or follow the Rally America stuff, the really epically long endurance racing, one of the classes that they have is the rally raid trucks. Now, I don't mean like the trophy trucks, like, what Robbie Gordon drives.
Robbie Gordon the X-Raid Minis and all that stuff,
right? Proper trucks.
Yeah, they look like
cargo box van trucks.
Yep.
They look like squat dump trucks, you know?
Yeah. And there was this picture, though, that Crazy Leo had posted of one of these rally raid trucks, all four in the air, fully airborne, coming over this sand dune. And it's like, oh, that is so epic. I want to drive one of those.
Yeah, I was showing that picture to some guys at lunch today. It's like, that's what they do in the Dakar that's not going to Dakar.
Right. Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, why doesn't my UPS guy do that?
You get delivered a lot faster.
Of course, then I'm thinking some of the things that he's delivering are like, okay, maybe it's good that he does it.
Yeah. Right.
What makes you think your UPS guy doesn't do that? He gets out there on the Patterson Rally stage and he has a good old time.
Yeah.
Race the truck, Dale!
He's like, what's that say? Fragile? Nah.
That's French jump. For unbreakable.
Exactly. That's French for I'm jumping this gravel hill.
So anyway, I'm sorry, Mr. Shaw, but I just had to insert that.
Those trucks are crazy cool. Well, I guess you can start off with the big trucks. The Russian Kamaz team won again, the Red Bull-sponsored team. But this time it was Karganov that won instead of I forget the guy who normally wins. I forget his name, who's won it a number of times. But teammate ended up winning the event. What was interesting, though, is that he had been battling it out back and forth with a guy named DeRoy. And he's in the Iveco trucks, and they've been kind of battling back and forth throughout the event. But there was in the very last stage, there was one of the rally raid smaller cars that's considered the actual truck category, I guess, or not the cars category, whatever they call it. Anyways, was on its side in the middle of the stage on the road, and DeRoy left first, and he goes just around, actually kind of taps into that car to get around it, and goes on to finish the event. Well, the Kamaz guy, this Karganov, actually stops and actually pulls out the guy and, you know, flips him back over onto his wheels, taking a bunch of, you know, of his time. He did have the lead by like 10 minutes or something, but he knew he was going to lose time, but he helped out this guy. And he knew that there's rules within the system that if they know that you do that, you're helping somebody else, they'll neutralize that time it took you to help someone out. So he did the good sportsmanship thing, helped the guy out, then got back on the stage, and guess what? He wins the event. So,
yay.
Yep. So good sportsmanship helps out when it comes to the Dakar there, because it's a dangerous and scary event.
Yeah, they lost a bike rider, right?
Yeah.
They did.
Palente.
That's a pretty sad event there, a Belgian. And let's see here, in the cars, Robbie Gordon ended up not finishing because he was not able to repair an issue that he ended up having with his Gordini, as he likes to call his truck. And they weren't able to get it fixed before getting onto the stage in time. So
electrical issue caused by this not being a proper Dakar truck.
That's exactly.
It is a Robbie Gordon original design, which tells you why it's a problem.
No. Hey, don't diss it just yet. I mean, give him time to continue development on said design, and maybe next year it works a little bit better, but you'll learn.
How long has he been on this design? Well, he made some radical changes this year, but...
It's a total different truck, actually.
Yeah, he's not doing the Hummer thing anymore.
Yeah, it's not a Hummer. It looks like a Hummer. That's just the body. But there's they had all kinds of issues with the aero kit on it actually didn't allow enough cooling. They had the vapor lock issues. Apparently, they only did like 100 miles of testing before they went down there.
Which is
not nearly enough and not in the right conditions.
No.
You know, when they first started out, they had the vapor lock issues with the fuel system.
Yeah.
Obviously some serious more development needs to go into it. So. The main domination though was all about the minis, those mini X-rayed vehicles.
Mm.
Holy crap. They don't look like much, but they could just keep going and going and going. We ended up having, Nani Roma ended up getting into the lead after Stefan Petterhansel, who's known as Mr. Dakar because he's won so many damn Dakar events. He ended up actually winning another stage near the end there where he I think it was a 60-second stage win for the Dakar. It's just amazing how good this guy is. Unfortunately, Mini BMW ended up issuing team orders, which sucks. I hate team orders. So that means on the very last stage, they ended up slowing up Petterhansel and our good friend Nasser Alatia to end up pulling off the road, letting Nani Roma, who had a flat, end up going in front of them, and then they had finished 1-2-3. So yay for Mini getting a 1-2-3 on the podium like they wanted. But as far as the total domination of Mini, of the top 10, 7 of them were the X-rayed Minis. That's a pretty big deal when you're talking about thousands of miles of racing.
Mm. Indeed. I mean, it sounds like they've been developing that car and nobody else really has.
Yeah. I was really had high hopes for Carlos Sainz, 2-time WRC champion. But the... I don't think this was last week we talked about it. So it was near the end of the week last week. He had finished at a fuel stop, and he was running late to get back onto the the racing part of the stage. He didn't have his belts completely done yet. He actually looked down to put on his belts, went off the road, ran into some rocks. He got actually injured a little bit, minor injuries, but the car was totaled, and he ended up not being able to finish the race. So much for Carlos Sainz in that one. Goes to show you. Put on your seatbelt first, then go. You know? It's just not worth it. Anyway. And last but not least, in the motorcycles, Mark Coma wins again. It's always been between Cyril Dupre and Mark Coma back and forth over the years. Mark Coma ends up getting this one for KTM, and he ended up having no challenge after Bereda Bort, a Spaniard who was doing very well and was catching up to him on Honda, but he ended up wrecking his bike, breaking some electrical stuff, and he just couldn't continue. The electrical problems took him out. So Cyril Dupre ended up finishing fourth. So that's it for the Dakar. Again, it's the ultimate endurance rally. One last thing. I didn't realize this, but these cars are never on a truck, like trailer. So the whole entire event, whenever they're driving it between stages, you know, so you got like sometimes you'll have like a 300 kilometer or 500 kilometer transit stage, and then a 300 kilometer, you know, racing stage, then another like 300 before you even get back to the bivouac. So here they are, they're racing, you know, 1,000 kilometers in just one day, you know, 8 in the morning to 8 at night every single day. And they said just the driving on the regular roads on these cars that are designed for racing, they just don't drive well. They're not comfortable. They're noisy. It just wears on you to do that for 2 weeks straight. Can you imagine? So it beats on you.
That doesn't sound fun.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that's not a very comfortable truck to drive in.
No, not at all. One of the guys that I heard an interview with had said that when he was back at the bivouacs aren't air conditioned or anything, so they're just a little bunk, and he ended up losing a couple of pounds just overnight sleeping in just water. Yeah, you're just sweating like crazy. He's like, he ended up actually going into one of the because back at the bivouac they do have the service trucks, and he'd just go and turn on the engine for one of the service trucks with the air conditioning on high. And just sleep inside the truck. He was more comfortable. that's a crazy event. So moving on to Rally America news. So last week I had made my little comments about how I think Rally America does have issues. You know, I'm going to stand by some of that.
No, they do. I mean, we've talked about it before, even before you put up that article about USAC coming in and you know, the sanctioning fees just went – well, the entrant fees just went, you know, triple when that happened. And it's hard to justify that.
It is. And, you know, what made it frustrating for me is just how many people were dropping out for the national championship. Mm-hmm. Again, the regionals, local guys, they're always going to be strong. They're always going to do well. The number of entries into any event is still going to be high because there are just not very many rally events overall anyhow, and there's such a strong following by the grassroots guys that it'll always be a full list. So that's good to hear. But there was some exciting news at the national level for this year.
I was going to say a full list overall.
Yeah.
But not a full list for the national championship.
Exactly. So, but, you know, we always like to see a couple of, you know, national teams, you know, go back and forth at it through the whole season. So, you know, it was kind of frustrating for me to see the people that I've seen again and again, you know, over the last couple of years. And I'm like, oh, I really want to see them battle it out to finally go away. And, yeah, I understand. It's expensive. The sponsors can only afford so much. The one thing that I kept hearing again and again was the cost for them to have a media person out there. They're charging $1,000 per person per event. That would be a specific media guy for the team. And that was just kind of the last thing for a lot of the guys. It's like, you know what? My sponsor that I had a sponsor to help pay for my fees. But now that's just too much. I can't do that much. But the sponsor wants, you know, media of some sort, you know, whether that's somebody recording some video or taking some pictures, you know, whatever, for the money they're giving out to the team to help them out. But these are just smaller sponsors. These are not manufacturer sponsors or anything like that. So so they still have an issue with the affordability when it comes to that. But, you know, there are still some good championship battles that are going to happen this year. The big news, of course, is Pastrana returns to Subaru. So Pastrana is coming back, but we kind of heard the rumors back in what? Gosh, what was that, December?
When he was no longer going into NASCAR, he said that he was coming back. So
he said he was coming back to do more rally and more stuff on the dirt. He didn't specify or anything like that. The fact that he was going to Subaru, I think, was something that was rumored way back in November. But obviously, the entire notification of anything like that just kind of went silent, and we could just speculate. But the official did come out. He is going to be coming back, but he will not be at the Snowdrift event that comes. That's this coming weekend. His debut will be at 100 Acre Wood. Mm. So you guys will be able to see him out there in the 100 Acre.
Woo! Woo-hoo. Well, maybe will he finish, though? Maybe at Tech. Maybe at Tech. there's a couple of extenuating circumstances that may occur, right? One, there could be a repeat of what was it, 2012?
Potosi Rally Stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, there was the year before.
2011. You know,
what I'm thinking, 2011, when he hit the culvert at the end of the Super Special, right?
Yeah. Yep.
For those of you who are not familiar with Lions Park there at Potosi, the Super Special at 100 Acre, it's in this park, and you do this kind of double loop thing, and you know, up the hill, around a couple of times, and down the hill, and then the run to the finish, you're coming downhill, and then there's a right-hander over basically a storm drain, right, a culvert, where there's a little corrugated pipe runs, you know, that helps to drain the storm runoff, and then you cross the lights. Well, Pastrana comes in a little hot and bends his driver's side rear control arm by just slamming right into that culvert, just what, a few yards from the timing lights. I'm like, really?
Yeah,
and, a little too much.
Yeah, and then you know, when he was there with the Vermont sports car, Colin McRae's car that he rolled at X Games famously. He did the Super Special, and it was brilliant. I was able to get a nice shot of him coming around sideways, and it was all epic and stuff. And then stage two, quarter mile in, bam, done.
Yeah, the first it was like the fifth corner, and everybody was joking. It's like, oh, it was a right turn. No wonder he had problems.
Yeah,
he's a NASCAR now.
It was a
sweeping left turn, and he slid wide, went off, tagged a tree or a tree root, and the GIS car tumbled.
Yeah, I think it was a root.
Yep.
And it was all done. But anyway, that's circumstance number one why we may not see Pastrana later on Friday or on Saturday. The second, Mr. Weitzel, I was looking at this Rye on Rye stuff again, that I'm bringing four-fifths, four 750-milliliter bottles down to 100 Acre with me for us to enjoy. It's 12%.
I'm looking forward to that. That's
there may be coverage of Tech on Thursday, and maybe, you know, since Park Exposé on Friday doesn't start until the afternoon, you know, about 1 o'clock, we may be okay there. But Saturday might be a little sketch.
Those 750 mil bottles, you know, it's once you pop, you can't stop. So.
That's right.
Well, this sounds like it's going to be fun.
Yep.
Are you going down there with him, Sean?
Well, probably, yeah. I don't see much that would hinder me from making it, I don't reckon.
Awesome. This could be a Founders Weekend.
Indeed.
A couple more bottles.
It's few and far between when this happens, but when it does, it usually ends up with me passing out in a lawn chair.
Pictures that being taken.
Yes, with pictures.
We have to say on the podcast, Mr. Peachin left us this past weekend. He got ran over by a rally car after he passed in the middle of the stage.
Right.
I mean, if you recall Mid-Ohio, I was there, and then I was sleeping.
Yeah. He doesn't recall much of Mid-Ohio. That's his issue.
There were moonshine.
That's what happened. He said,
moonshine cherries.
There were moonshine cherries and craft beers.
Okay, yeah, moonshine cherries are not permitted at any other official.
It just got to the point where we ran
out. Unfortunately, I don't have any right now.
It just got to the point where I was out of the, we were out of the juice, and I was like, just give me the damn cherries, Mike, and we're just like eating them. I think we have too many. I think we have too many cherries. Allow me to alleviate some of that liquid.
And my dad was so sketched out.
He was. Oh my, that was a good time.
Oh, it was. Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Shaw.
That's all right. It's all good stuff.
Your memories.
You know, that's one of the awesome things about Rally, though, is, you know, because it does take that longer amount of time, you know, you can enjoy yourself. You can go do a barbecue, drink, have a good time, go out to the stage, then watch the cars go by, then return, you know, as long as you don't end up with Snowdrift 2.0 this year.
Oh, Lord.
Because that's what happened last year.
Let's make it that out, Doug. No. Barbecue in February.
Mm. Ooh, hey, bring that pulled pork.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could do the pulled pork.
Mm.
So Tab's pulled pork that she gave to Last Ditch Racing that time, that was fantastic.
Yeah, we've improved it.
Nice.
So I it first, and then she does her magic thing.
You don't live in Colorado. No,
I was going to say, wait a minute, what?
That kind of pork,
kind of like brownies, what?
This pulled pork's awesome. I got the munchies. You got any more of that pulled pork?
Yeah, do we have any tips to go with this pulled pork?
Apparently, since I've been gone, this show has turned to a very drug-friendly environment. I'm a little concerned that we may have to implement drug testing.
Oh, I know all my drugs. Go ahead, test away. But no, seriously though, we have been working on our pulled pork skills, and I think we've improved since we brought that batch to Last Ditch the last time they came to 100 Acre.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm pretty sure that we have some other motorsports to cover before we go on any more tangent.
Okay, so the next big news that came out of Rally America National Championship is a big move by Andrew Comrie Picard. Remember, he's the one that's been developing and driving the ugly duckling toaster that is the Scion XD.
Bah!
Yes, and the Scion XD will no longer be driven by ACP, though. He now makes a big move over to Team O'Neill to drive the Fiesta R2. So that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that is.
It seemed like actually the XD was finally doing better with, you know, it's got the turbo on it to give it a little more oomph. They had done some major suspension changes to it, and it looked like it was getting a bit more competitive. It just wasn't nearly as reliable and as strong as the R2 Fiesta. And, of course, when they threw Brendan Reeves and Rhiannon Smythe, or now Rhiannon Gelsomino, in that R2 Fiesta with their experience that they've had driving it when they were with the WRC Academy and all that stuff, there really just wasn't a chance for ACP at that point. They're just too frickin' fast.
You bad.
Yeah. But so it'll be interesting to see how Andrew Comrie Picard does in the Ford Fiesta. Obviously, he's committed to the full season with that. But that makes one wonder, well, who's going to drive the Scion? Well, interestingly enough, the Scion is going to be driven by none other than Matthew Johnson, who does the video, YouTube videos, typically, for Rally America.
Well, wait, back up. He's not the videographer.
No, he's not the videographer. He's the host.
Right.
He's a former commentator and race driver. And actually, he returns with his co-driver, which was actually ACP's former co-driver, Jeremy Wimpy, in the Scion XD. So Jeremy stays with Scion, but gets Matthew Johnson as the driver. We haven't seen Matthew Johnson drive since, gosh, I don't think he's been out there since 2009, 2010.
It's been a while since he's been you know, a regular competitor.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's been behind the wheel, at least in Rallycross, if not in any performance rallies.
Yeah, he does stunt driving and stuff like that. I don't know if you've ever watched some of the videos. He's done some stuff with different manufacturers and whatnot where he's done some TV commercials and done some stunt driving.
That's not competitive rally.
It isn't, but, you know, does mean that you get some...
It's still seat time, it's still car control, but... Right. But, you know, having said that, I don't expect him to be uncompetitive because of his own talents. If he is uncompetitive, I'm going to blame the car, not him.
Gotcha. And what will be interesting to see is how well – one thing that's really cool about him is how good he is at explaining the technical stuff.
Oh,
the layman.
He's so brilliant.
What is so good about that, though, is being able to maybe tell engineers in the same way, right? So his ability to communicate what the car is doing to the engineers to maybe improve that car, maybe better than ACP did. Don't know. We'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see.
That also then makes me wonder, who's going to do the YouTube videos? Just kind of
well,
make me... Anyway, doesn't really matter as much, but he was so good at doing
those. Let's not get in.
Anyhow,
yeah, there's that's a dark road that we really don't want to go down right now. You know,
TV coverage, but that's all right. Anyway, so the next event is actually coming up this weekend, the first re-event of the Rally America Championship, and it will be the Snowdrift Rally, which is everybody's favorite great white winter fest with no studs. No studded tires, that is. that's always an interesting one. You know, obviously with the blizzard that's coming through, what is it, tomorrow? Through the entire Northeast. And I don't know, is it going to get the Great Lakes area? Do you guys know?
I'm not sure. I have not followed the weather forecast.
Because is taking place in Michigan, so I'm not sure if it's going to get hit it or not. But they are talking about, you know, major blizzards and flight cancellations already. So they could get quite the dumping of snow. But what snow's already there hasn't melted, obviously. So there's still plenty of white stuff from what I've seen from pictures from people out there. So really, we got in the open class, you got Antoine Lestage is going to be there. You've got him with Marshall Clark as his co-driver. He no longer has Natalie Richard. She's left him and is looking for other opportunities. Of course, you've got David Higgins for Subaru. And then you've got Adam Yeoman, who's with FY Racing. That's probably your top ones that are going to be competing in open class. You don't have Ken Block there. Again, Travis Pastrana won't be showing up until 100 Acre. So it'll be a little bit different group of people there, but it should be still a pretty good battle. You know, Antoine Lestage won it last year, so it'll be Higgins versus Lestage. Higgins will still be in the updated Subaru WRX, the 2014 edition. He will not be in the 2015 body car. That was stated when the Travis Pastrana news came out, that the 2015 WRX will debut at some point later in the season. So Vermont Sports Car is working on it and testing it and building a version. So for Rally America. So that'll be kind of cool.
Fantastic.
In Super Production, we're going to have Dylan Van Way is now moved to Super Production from two-wheel drive. He did the last two events in Rally America last year, driving a Super Production Vermont Sports Car-built Subaru. He was shown very quick. So that'll be interesting to see, but speed isn't everything when it comes to, of course, Snowdrift. You've got Lachlan O'Sullivan, who's won championships before. So he's the return of him for the season. That'll be kind of cool. I don't know if he's doing all events, but he's definitely got some booked up, including, of course, Snowdrift here. David Sterix, who said originally he was not going to do Snowdrift and said he was not going to do the full Rally America Championship, he had stated that all he was going to do was maybe Oregon Trail because that's closer to his home in California. Well, it turns out all the people that made comments, and I would like to think that in my article with all the commotion that it caused maybe had something to do with it, maybe not. But enough people commented to him on his Facebook page and got a hold of him and other people that are racers, encouraged him enough that he's actually came back and is going to do Snowdrift. He originally wasn't going to do it. So that is pretty exciting. I'm happy to hear that just the fan base and other competitors are enough to encourage somebody to do another event. Maybe we can encourage Sterix to do more. I'd be happy to see that because I think he's a phenomenal competitor. He's very quick, and it'll be neat to see the likes of Dylan Van Way, who's been an up-and-comer, compete against somebody that's more experienced like that. And then, of course, with Lachlan O'Sullivan out there, that'll be pretty exciting. Another exciting add-on to that is Nick Roberts, who was the 2013 Rookie of the Year last year. He's now teamed up with actually Rhiannon Gelsomino. So Rhiannon, she's the one that was Brendan Reeves' two-wheel drive co-driver and his sister. She married Alex Gelsomino, which is Ken Block's co-driver, and they now live in Park City, Utah. And turns out that she's going to end up co-driving for Nick Roberts for the entire season. So a Rookie of the Year getting the experience of a WRC-trained co-driver, that should help them quite a bit. It'll be interesting to see how well they do. Also in Super Production, we will not be seeing Mason Moyle. He's selling his rally car, which is really sad because he's always performed very well in Michigan and on the slick stuff. But I've been trading some messages back and forth with him. He won't tell me too many details, but he does have something brewing. But I won't know until February, so don't know what the deal is with that. But it's certainly not going to be Super Production in the same car for this year.
February? Is he going to be a 100 acre?
It's not looking like it. I actually asked him if he'd be at Oregon Trail even, and he said it's not looking like it, but he might be up here in the Northwest for some other reason. So does that mean he's got some deal with the Dirtfish guys? I don't know. We'll find out later. It's all speculation right now, and I'll just keep digging at him. Maybe he'll tell me more. In two-wheel drive, it's all going to be, of course, ACP and Matthew Johnson. So Ford versus Scion. That's pretty much all she wrote. I'm really upset that I'm not going to see Chris Greenhouse out there. He wasn't able to keep pace with these guys that have more money and have more financial backing from the, you know, being manufacturer type sponsors. But that Neon, he actually did really good in, but he's going to actually instead do NASA and some events up in Canada instead. So it just got too expensive to do Rally America for him, which is kind of too bad. I'm kind of upset about that. But we'll have an Inside the Helmet kind of interview with him later, talk to him a little bit, and he wants to come on the show and do that. That would be kind of cool. And one last note, no Verena May, at least for this event. I don't know what the rest of her season looks like yet.
Well, that sucks.
Sorry, dude. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. She's been doing a lot of promotional stuff, though. She's been all over Facebook doing promo stuff for, you know, for different sponsors that she's got to help her out. So,
which is why I'm kind of surprised that she's not going to be at Snowdrift.
Yeah, me too. So I don't know. Maybe she's still just cooking up something. You know, I know she wanted to step up a class. She was working on upgrading the car. Because it's not a full R2 spec.
Right, right.
Her Fiesta that she's got is
it's just a stock,
a step up above R1, but not quite, you know?
It's a stock Fiesta with GoFast parts, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, what's an R2 other than you throw in the sequential gearbox and a, you know, a couple other doodads? But,
well, okay, sequential, you know, gearbox is a little bit more than just some bolt-on GoFast parts.
Okay, fine. It's still a stock engine, though, and some other stuff. But,
yeah,
anyway, so maybe that's what it is. She's trying to build up the money to go full R2. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what pans out with that. Going to try and get some more info from her here soon. But Snowdrift this weekend, pay attention to it. You won't be able to watch it, of course, live because that's America and Rally TV coverage, which is the whole subject that we just can't
get
into.
We're
going
to get live timing and scoring, though, right?
Yes, you will get timing. Well, not live, because as usual, the timing, trying to get that
really
stuff broadcast is not easy. So, but, you know, when they get back to service and whatnot. So if you go to rallyamerica.com, you'll have the updated times. As soon as they get them, they'll be published on the web.
Okay, so we'll have reasonably up-to-date timing and scoring.
Yes.
How about that?
There you go.
Okay.
That's it for Rally News.
That brings us to the end of the rally coverage. And at the end of the show, we have a pittance of F1 coverage to follow. Caterham has signed Kamui Kobayashi, fanboy head explosion somewhere located in Higginsville, Missouri area. And also Marcus Ericsson. So that is their driver lineup for this season. Kobayashi actually turned down a paying seat in a Ferrari car for World Endurance Championship so that he could drive for no money for Caterham. Yeah, don't quite understand that one because I still wonder if Caterham's even going to exist this coming season. We shall see.
Do you want to run at the back of the grid where no one's going to see you in WEC? Do you want to run in the back of the grid where everybody's going to see you in Formula One? I mean, that's really what it comes down to, right?
Well, everybody's going to see you if Vettel is so far in the lead that they actually pan the camera farther back down the field.
Nice. Everybody's going to see you when Vettel passes you six times in a race.
Nice.
Anyway, Marcus Ericsson is a good pick as well for this seat, and obviously he probably brought money. Caterham is not having the best of financial situations, and Tony Fernandez actually made a ultimatum to the team saying that if you do not have better results this season, I will no longer fund the team, which basically means I can no longer fund the team. Bernie Ecclestone is to stand trial in Germany. Yeah, we kind of knew this was coming. It sounds like it's going to happen in April, and Bernie could face up to 10 years in prison, according to the German authorities on this issue. This is there are some outlets that question the timing of this because it was in conjunction. You know, they were wondering why they didn't wait until the trial in the UK finished before they brought it to trial in Germany. Well, I'll tell you why. Because the Germans actually don't give a crap what happens in the UK. Fairly simple. They're prosecuting him because they feel they have a reason to prosecute him. They don't care what everybody else finds. They already found the guy who received the bribe guilty, so therefore they're going after the guy who gave the bribe. It's pretty simple stuff. We shall see how this goes, because Bernie Ecclestone has more money than most gentleman of his age and standing, so he might be able to just buy himself, you know, Hockenheim to make amends for said issues. You know, since he's already buying the Nürburgring, maybe they'll ask him to buy Hockenheim as well to get him out of said legal issues. It's interesting, though, because of these recent revelations that there is a trial date set in April. Ecclestone has stepped down from the F1 board of directors. However, he will continue day-to-day operational control of F1 during the trial and time. Like that, we shall see. This is probably the most curious thing that we've heard out of F1 this week. Out of F1 this week, we've heard that NASCAR's Gene Haas, you have heard his name before many times. He's also part owner of the Stuart Haas racing team, along with his own racing team. He is considering an entry into F1.
Haven't we seen this movie before?
Yes and no.
Didn't it end badly?
It ended with, yes, we've produced toasters. You know, they could do a Kickstarter campaign, and they could get like a toaster that has their logo on the side. It's USF2.
Oh, nice. Well played, well played.
But let's talk about this realistically. This is a guy who has significant holdings in racing teams already. He has significant shop space with racing teams already. He has significant investments in racing teams already. And, oh, yeah, you know that Rolling Road wind tunnel that has the 180-mile-an-hour belt on it? He owns that. And all the F1 teams come over and use it. Maybe there's something to this.
You know, I don't know.
Charge a little more for the wind tunnel. Hey, suddenly you're in the F1.
I mean, there's
a lot more to going to F1 than just, hey, I have a wind tunnel and an autoclave.
Fair enough. But he's got a whole lot more capability than, say, a Marussia does.
Well, that's true. That's true.
The talk that I've heard on this is that he's talking about having Dallara be his car manufacturer. So we've seen that movie.
I've seen that movie too.
as long as he pays his bills, maybe there won't be an issue.
Yeah. Wait, doesn't he have facilities in Belgium? Did I read that right?
Yes, he has facilities in Europe that he can use to be the European base for the team. You know, I don't completely discount this because Gene Haas has shown that he has business acumen, unlike Peter Windsor. But there are a couple of other potential options. Other potential contenders for this slot are believed to be former F1 boss Colin Coles, and also Stefan GP has been making some noise as well. So there are potentially three bidders for this slot. We shall wait and see if this is just wishful thinking by the media, but it does sound like Gene Haas has definitely made a case for the bid. Beyond that, the only other thing going on in F1 would be car launches start on Friday. So if you want to see the angle of the dangle, McLaren will launch their car on Friday.
But, you know, McLaren has usually done a pretty good job of keeping their car more or less looking normal. Because if you remember, when everybody else had that step nose, they didn't.
Yeah. Well, and,
right? They
and
found a way to keep it like normal looking.
If McLaren disappoints us by not giving us a phallic inspired front nose on their car, Ferrari will be launching on the 25th.
With a little Lego piece attached to the front.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the car launches are going to start on Friday. The testing will get underway in Jerez next Tuesday before we go to podcast next week. So between that time, McLaren launches on Friday, Ferrari launches on Saturday, Sauber on Sunday, Toro Rosso on Monday, Mercedes and Caterham on Tuesday, as well as Red Bull. We still haven't heard things from everybody on this, but it sounds like everybody's going to be at the test except for Lotus. The only other thing to point out is McLaren has said that they will launch with no primary sponsor on their car. They don't have a primary sponsor going into the season. However, they say they've got McLaren.
Okay.
However, they say that, you know, they made a statement today that they have more funding than they've ever had as a team going into this season, except they just don't have a primary sponsor. And that sounds like primary bullcrap, if you ask me, but we shall see.
Reaching into that war chest.
Yeah, well, that could be it. There's been some movement at McLaren as well. It sounds like Ron Dennis is back in control at McLaren. And there is talk that Ross Brawn is on his way to McLaren. And some other things going on. So it sounds like McLaren is a team in flux after last season's desperate attempt at relevance. Yes, it was. It was a terrible season for McLaren. Testing will start at Jerez on Tuesday and go through Friday of next week, so January 28th through 31st. And this will be fun. I mean, we've heard Jensen Button say this could be catastrophic, basically. teams may not get much testing at all. We've been hearing, you know, throughout the week of teams just starting up their cars for the first time and running the engines in the cars for the first time and, you know, playing around with them on the dynos and the shaker rigs and all that kind of stuff. And I'll tell you, this is kind of going to be fun this season because not only do you have the you know, Sean, you will definitely agree with me on this one, but not only do we have the potential uncertainty of these new untried chassis engine, you know, ERS-K and ERS-H and all this kind of stuff, we also have the potential enjoyment of having Fernando Alonso and Kimi Raikkonen on the same team.
Oh, my.
This is going to be epic.
Yes, it should prove to be amazing. I can't wait. I know who I will be standing behind in this fight of the barbarians.
Kimmy!
But yeah, exactly. I have to go with the boy Raikkonen, but it'll be tough.
And guess who has Mr. Raikkonen on his fantasy racing team for the Speed Geeks fantasy league? Aw, yeah. Of course I've got the Kimster, right?
You probably should. I mean, you know, I just don't understand.
Well, it's because someone beat me to Vettel, but...
Oh.
You know, after Vettel, yeah, it's all about Kim.
It's all the play for.
And I think I speak with the rest of the F1 world when I say, you know, if Vettel comes out and wins in Melbourne, I'm not watching the rest of the season.
Melbourne. Yeah.
It got a little rough last year.
That's what happens, man. This, we haven't seen this since the Schumacher days, which was actually, oddly enough, not that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago, and I am planning on rehashing my Schumacher days by taking my Williams number 3 hat to a certain autograph session at Mid-Ohio and making sure that I get the proper autograph placed on said hat.
I don't know if Juan Pablo will like that.
If he doesn't. What,
signing his own hat?
Well, you know. What?
See that was back in the day when he was actually successful, you know, back to Williams and everything.
That was way, way back, you know, 50 pounds ago.
Oh, wow. That's big stuff. Guess who's never coming on the show because of that? I don't feel that way.
I see with Juan Pablo going to IndyCar, maybe he really needs to just get together with Tony and do like a double dunk soda cookie commercial.
Wow.
I love the soda cookies.
I like the soda cookie commercial. I actually found myself one day sitting at lunch and I was like,
oh no, I know where this is going.
I was like, I was like, I wonder. Now, granted, I was not able to have them because I only had the soda. I didn't have the cookie portion. But I was like, man, I wonder what that would taste like.
Well, yeah. I will tell you, it tastes like ass. Don't do it.
You've had a soda cookie?
Yeah, it's bad.
You've had the other thing?
I know. I started saying it was even worse. Have you had? What? It's so disgusting.
But yes, the commercial is hilarious. The actual ingestion of a soda cookie is not so excellent.
No, that does not sound.
I could see that. Well, gentlemen, that takes us to the time of the evening where we say the show is over. You can all go home. But I do have to ask, do we have any unspent rounds that need to be shot at the target?
I will live. I don't
Doug?
Need
it. I will say that the Kansas City Region SCCA had its annual banquet. God. this past weekend, it was great. We had a great time, and really looking forward to the MidDiv convention down in what's that place where Lambert's is, home of the Throat Row, Springfield.
Oh yeah,
down in Springfield, Missouri, here at the end of the month. Going to that, so look for a report from there.
Excellent.
Cool. Well, my beer is empty.
Yeah, mine is as well.
My two beers are empty, and they were 16-ouncers, and I'm going to go to bed now. Gentlemen, have a wonderful evening, and thank you for tuning in, everybody, to listen to us wax poetic about the realm of auto racing.